Seeing is believing, yes?
Yeah.
How many of you think that the bar in the middle is lighter over there than over there? Yeah. Hands up. How about now? You still think it's lighter?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about now? Yeah. Now? Yeah. No. It is the same colour. The same colour the whole way across. I promise. I made the slide. You have to trust the vicar. How about this one? Are the horizontal lines straight or wonky? You sure about that? Can you see the box there? How about... Oh no, that one's straight too. Oh, that one's straight as well. Isn't that strange? I like that one. How many legs does the elephant have?
Four.
Four.
It's a strange one. That one really messes with your head, that one. The longer you stare at it, the more your eyes go funny. Some of you may have seen those sort of famous double illustrations. This is the first one. Is it a duck or is it a rabbit? You see a duck? Who can see a duck? Who can see a rabbit? Yeah? This one's perhaps a bit more famous. Who sees a red Indian? Who sees an Eskimo looking into a cave? Yeah? Who can see both? Of course it's both, isn't it? And actually, believe it or not, this is a good lesson to learn for reading the Bible, particularly for reading prophecy books like Isaiah, where the passages can be referring to several things at once, sometimes even spread over many centuries. If you don't like optical illusions, but you prefer vegetables... the Bible is like an onion. It has layers. If you don't like vegetables, but you like donkeys, donkeys also have layers, particularly in Shrek. No? Anyone get that pop culture reference? One or two of you. So let's dive into Isaiah. If you'd like to open your Bibles up to Isaiah chapter 49. Can't remember the page number. Can you remember the page number, anyone? 560. 16, sorry, 516, Isaiah chapter 49, verses 1 to 7. Isaiah starts, "Listen to me, you islands. Hear this, you distant lands. Before I was born, the Lord called me. From my mother's womb, he has spoken my name. Here speaks God's chosen. Whoever or whatever that is, called and named from the womb." Notice that the chosen one speaks to islands or distant nations. Well, that's us. We're an island, aren't we? We're quite a long way from Israel here. He's speaking to us. So I hope you're listening. I'll ask you afterwards. What does the chosen say? Have a look in verse 2 with me. He, that's God, made my mouth like a sharpened sword. And then slightly further down, he made me into a polished arrow. Now, sharpened swords and polished arrows, they gleam, don't they, with reflected light. Sort of, you can see them glinting in the sun. They're beautiful in a way, gleaming like that. They are deadly as well. They are powerful and they are dangerous. When I saw these words, I remembered Revelation chapter 19, where John sees a picture of a man on a horse, and out of the man's mouth comes a two-edged sword. You know that one? Mm-hmm. That's Jesus. Keep looking in verse 2. He says, "In the shadow of his hand he hid me and concealed me in his quiver." So God's chosen is hidden, guarded, protected, kept safe until the right time. Now, if you're a bit of a grammar nerd, like me, who is the subject and who is the object in verse 2? The subject is God. God is the one doing the thing. The object is the chosen one. He is the one that's having stuff done to him. He is the one being called, being made by God. Can anyone tell me who this gentleman is? Jose Mourinho. Good. Glad we have a visitor this morning. You're all useless. It's Jose Mourinho. He's one of the sort of top football managers currently. He manages Manchester United at the moment. But he has managed lots of other teams around Europe. When he first came to England, he managed Chelsea. And in his first press conference, he gave himself a nickname. Does anyone know what he said he was called? The special one. Close. The special one. That's right, he called himself the special one. You've got to be quite brazen to do something like that. He did sort of live up to the nickname, I have to say. He won quite a lot of trophies at Chelsea that first time. But still, there's none of that with God's chosen. Verse 2 again, he made my mouth like a sharpened sword. In the shadow of his hand, he hid me. He made me into a polished arrow, and he concealed me in his quiver. He's not boasting about himself, or herself, or itself, or themselves. He's pointing to God. God did these things. God is the subject. He does it by his power. The chosen is who he is because of the Lord. But the chosen is still pretty special, isn't he? I mean, you know, called by God, equipped by God, chosen by God. I expect he's going to be some sort of great king or a great lord or a mighty warrior. Have a look in verse 3. God said to me, you're my servant. That's a bit of a letdown, isn't it? You are my servant. In verse 5, he who formed me in the womb to be his servant. So who is the chosen? Who is this servant? Got three answers on the board here. Answer one is Isaiah himself. After all, in verse 1, the prophet says, look, listen to me. Before I was born, the Lord called me. So perhaps the servant is Isaiah. But then in verse 3, God says, you are my servant Israel. So perhaps the servant is the people of Israel. Or perhaps, verse 5, he who formed me in the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to him and gather Israel to himself. Well, that must be someone else then. So perhaps it's Jesus who said that he came to call the lost sheep of Israel. So, who thinks it's one? Put your hands up. Some who thinks it's two? Couple more hands. Who thinks it's three? Okay, more thinks it's actually answer four. All of the above, but mostly Jesus. In a sense, Isaiah is the chosen. Because like all the prophets, he was calling the people of God back to God. They were in exile, and he was reminding them of God's faithfulness, his love for his people, and promising that soon God would bring them home. But then Israel was called and chosen by God right from the call of Abram, who said, all the nations on the earth will be blessed through you. So in a sense, the chosen is the people of Israel as well. And of course, as I said, that purpose was finally fulfilled in Jesus, who came to call God's people back to himself. Now, I don't know what images come to mind when you think of the word servant. Perhaps something from Downton Abbey or something similar, whatever they're called. I always get the names wrong. Was that the right one that time? Yeah. Jess was watching them. I kept getting it wrong, whatever it was called. I kept mixing it with one of the others. Perhaps something like that, someone who waits on tables, wears drab clothes, perhaps. I don't know, perhaps doesn't have their own house. They sort of live in a room upstairs. Our vicarage used to have a maid's staircase with a little maid's room. It doesn't anymore, I hasten to add. Perhaps that's someone, that's the sort of image you think of when you hear the word servant. And I wonder if you would put God in that category. If you're really, truly honest, Do you think about God as a humble servant? Or do you think of him as a mighty and strong warrior who fights for you? Of course, he is both. But in Jesus, God shows us which is more important. Jesus said in Mark 10, verse 45, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." Friends, service is in God's nature. It's who God is. The eternal dance of the Trinity is marked by that self-giving and sharing of love. Looking to the other, not just being greedy with everything ourselves. God didn't change who he was suddenly in Jesus in the New Testament. He's not a different God. He's just showing us more of who he is. This is who God is and always has been and always will be. Faithful, holy, just, true, and full of self-giving, sacrificial love. Now, we've already touched on what the servant is called to do by God, the servant's purpose, to bring God's people back to himself. They've lost their way and they need to be brought back. They've lost their focus on God. But remember verse 1, the servant speaks to distant nations. And in verse 6, God spells out that this servant's mission is bigger than simply bringing God's people back to himself. It is to be a light for the Gentiles. It is too small a thing for you to be my servant, to restore the tribes of Jacob, to bring back those of Israel I've kept. Sounds like quite a big thing to me. It's too small a thing just to do that as well. I'm going to make you a light to the Gentiles, God says, that my salvation may reach even to Amington, to the very ends of the world. It's one of the most important passages in the Bible. Isaiah 49 verse 6. We'll come back to it later. You may recognise it because that little phrase, "a light to the Gentiles," comes in the Song of Simeon. When Simeon, who was an old man, took Jesus in his arms in the temple, he said, "You are a light to the Gentiles," about Jesus. It's so important because it tells us that God is for everyone. God's salvation is bigger than one people. It's bigger than one nation. It's bigger even than the Church of England. The good news of God is that we're not alone. The good news of God is that we're not alone in the mess of this life. The good news of God is that it doesn't matter who we are or where we live or what we've done. If we turn back to God, he will forgive us. He will shine his light in that darkness. The third, that forgiveness, that life that God gives freely, was won at great cost. Did you spot in verse 3? It doesn't sound like much fun being this servant. Verse 4. "But I said, I have laboured in vain. I have spent all my strength for nothing at all. Yet what is due to me is in the Lord's hand, and my reward is with my God." Here Isaiah was prophesying the cross of Christ, the ultimate futility and waste of life. If that had been the end, God's servant Jesus would indeed have laboured in vain. He would indeed have spent all his strength for nothing at all. But it was not the end. As Isaiah prophesied, even in futility, Jesus trusted in God's faithfulness. And he was not let down. Because finally, in verse 7, the servant's purpose is to be honoured. "To him who was despised and abhorred by the nation, to the servant of rulers, kings will see you and stand up. Princes will see and bow down." One day all people will realise who Jesus is and they will give him the honour that he deserves. And how does all that happen? Who makes it happen? Because of the Lord who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel who has chosen you. God the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, chose his servant from the beginning. God the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, was faithful to him to the end. If you remember nothing from my talk this morning, don't remember the duck that's a duck and a rabbit. Remember this, because of the Lord who is faithful. And if that's too many words to remember, remember those words. Because of the Lord. He is the first, the last, and the greatest. Now, earlier on, I tried cruelly, didn't I, to trick you with this slide. Who is the chosen? And the hidden answer was 4. Actually, there was another hidden answer. Hidden answer 5, you. Well, actually, us, the church. You see, in Acts 13, verse 47, Paul and Barnabas, they're preaching in the synagogue. And the Jews stir up a load of trouble because they're jealous of how many people are starting to follow Jesus. And they kick them out. And Paul and Barnabas say this: we are going to go to the Gentiles, for this is what the Lord has commanded us. I have made you a light to the Gentiles, that you may bring salvation to the ends of the earth. Recognize those words? It's Isaiah 49, verse 6. They quote Isaiah 49, verse 6, not talking about Isaiah, not talking about Israel, not talking about Jesus, but talking about themselves. And by extension, the church, that's us. So that's true. What's true of the servant is true of everyone who is adopted into God's family. The church, which is not a building, lovely though this one is, it's all the people in God's family everywhere across the world and in all the ages. So everyone in God's family is chosen. We are all equipped like a sharp sword or a polished arrow. We all have our part to play. We are all kept safe, hid in God's hand. It means even though we may stumble, even though we may be harmed sometimes, God will not let us fall. We are all made by God, loved by him to be like Jesus, to serve. To be God's servants, called to take his light into the world. Everyone in God's family is all those things. Not because we're special or because we deserve it, we're better than everyone else. Because, anyone remember the phrase I said to remember? Because of the Lord. Because of the Lord, you are chosen, equipped, kept safe, and made. Made to serve. Because of the Lord. He is the reason. He is the purpose. He is the one who is always with us. And so your homework this week is to remind yourself of this every day. Because of the Lord, I am loved. Because of the Lord, I am chosen. Because of the Lord, I am forgiven. Because of the Lord, I am equipped. Because of the Lord, I am kept safe. Because of the Lord, I am created to serve. Not because of anything I've done, because of the Lord. So if you want that, if you want that life of a loved and chosen child of God, it starts with saying sorry to God every day, doesn't it? Those of us who have been around a long time as Christians know it's not just something you do once. It is a daily and a constant turning back to God to receive his forgiveness. His forgiveness never runs out. We come to God, we receive his forgiveness, and this is the life that he has prepared for us. And it is wonderful. This is what it means to be a truly, truly alive human being. To live in God's family. Not because we deserve it, but because of the Lord. Amen.